Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1 with Opel and the all-new Opel Crossland. Beauty isn't scared of life.
First, though, I'm joined by the Chief Executive of the HSE, Paul Reid, to get an update on the vaccine rollout and the Living with COVID plan, which is due to be released by the government tomorrow. Good morning to you, Paul Reid. Thank you for joining us.
Good morning, Claire.
So let's talk first of all about vaccines. How many were administered in the last week?
Yeah, Claire, just before I do answer your question, can I just take a very brief moment to express on behalf of the HSE our sincere condolences to Dr. Tony Hull and the sad passing of his wife, Emer. Emer was a very valued employee of the HSE for many, many years in our public health teams, and she's hugely respected and sadly missed, and indeed to Clodagh and Ronan this morning. Just want to take a brief time to say that.
I think all of us would join with you in expressing our sympathies to the family, and it's a really difficult time for them today. So thank you for saying that.
Thank you.
So now, the vaccines, and people will want to know just where we are with the plan and how many have been administered, as I said to you, over the last 7 days.
Yeah, thanks, Gara. And if we just look at the last week, I mean, what we are beginning to see now based on supply is a ramping up, and we all know we were delivering approximately about 40,000-45,000 per week up to now. Last week, as in just gone as of yesterday, we'll have delivered approximately 80,000 vaccines. Final figures will issue shortly, but about 80,000 last week, significantly across a range of different, so 13,500 of those will have been done to the 85-year-old pluses cohort of population, which is really important for us. $25,000 very significantly will have been delivered to long-term care facilities, residents and staff, and then, $25,000 frontline healthcare workers and $42,000 to long-term residents and staff. So now what we are seeing now for next week, if you like, we're heading up to over 100,000 planned for delivery for this coming week now. And an important couple of points in that. Firstly, we'll again be further increasing to about 40,000 people in the 85-year age plus. But also significantly,
how many 85-year-olds plus do we have in the country?
Yeah, there's 72,500 in that age bracket. There's almost 500,000 in the 70-year age plus of the population. So over the course of the next 2 weeks, we will have completed the 85-year age plus group. I must say, I was in the Helix Centre in DCU on Saturday, and it was just an absolutely joyous, electric occasion. And I think it gives us all a good confidence, hope, but gives us a good insight into what a vaccination centre like that. I mean, there were over 1,000 people vaccinated, administered vaccines on Saturday. And I spoke to many, many, many of the families and people getting the vaccine. And it was just, they just wanted to express their great gratitude and joy. They had a really tough year, but they were just so grateful now to feeling more confident about when they go out and about, these people living at home in our communities. Indeed, you might recall there was one clip from Bridie, who was 103-year-old, living in Summerhill, and just relaying her story back to me was quite emotional.
And is the advice to them that they can get out and about now?
Well, I think the advice will always be, and it goes for every age as we vaccinate, is that we have to keep our diligence on the public health measures. And certainly for the elderly population who have been getting out and about, you know, to the level they're able to at the moment. But it really is to hold a guard now, to keep holding a guard, keep holding the public health measures. But it does, I think, give us all a sense of a route out, and certainly a sense of good, strong hope from what we're seeing. So this week's an important week for us.
And when you look at what's going to happen over the coming weeks, are we still on course for all the over 70s to be vaccinated with both doses by the middle of May, which is your target?
Yeah, I think what you'll see is we'll be moving through the different age brackets of the population over each couple of weeks. So in 2 weeks' time, we'll be starting in the 80 to 84 year age groups. And ultimately, everybody in that 70-year age plus will have received their first vaccine, as you mentioned, by the middle of April, and then the second vaccine completed for everyone by the middle of May. So that's an important milestone for us overall, to have very significant vulnerable part of the population living in the community vaccinated. So I think what we're seeing, Claire, just to go back to your very early question, what we're seeing now is a scaling up based on supply. We've always been delivering anything that's supplied to us. So 80,000 last week, 100,000 next week. And in April, if supply has come true as they're committed to us across all of the vaccine types, we will start to getting over 1 million a month, you know, and that's 250,000 a week.
And what happens then in March? Because there's a long way to go. I mean, every week feels so long at the moment, but I mean, there's a long way to go before we get to that point where we've a million coming in a month. What's supply going to look like in the coming weeks?
Yeah, if you look in total supply up to the end of March, it's 1.25 million of total vaccine doses delivered to us. Now, some of them arrived, literally 200,000 of those arrived probably around the 31st of March, but ultimately 1.25 million coming to us. If you take February alone, there'll be 417,000 vaccine types delivered to us. And then in March, 620,000 vaccine types delivered to us. So, you know, we are seeing the quarter improving, thankfully, with supplies for this quarter. But certainly the next quarter. And again, we always qualify this because we've seen how unpredictable it has been with suppliers for a range of different reasons. But based on, I think we should begin to see things settle from suppliers based on their own manufacturing strengthening, you know.
And have you seen any indication that there will be any disruption in the expected supply in the coming weeks?
I guess, Claire, it's probably fair to say we have seen disruption in this quarter. Between supplies, there was original disruption on the Pfizer-BioNTech just for a very short week or two, not as much as projected. We did see a disruption on the projected AstraZeneca. So I'm just trying to assure your listeners that, you know, based on supply we get, we will deliver those vaccines every given week. But there has been disruption. But my own sense of it would be we should begin to see that more predictability emerging in quarter two.
I just know that you say all the time, and you said it there again, you know, every vaccine that you get, you're administering it. Are you a hostage to fortune in saying that you can continue to do that once the supply starts to ramp up to a million a month?
And look, Claire, we have to do it. All of our plans in the last few weeks, from a health service perspective, we want to get this vaccine out very rapidly, and particularly the way the groupings are to treat vulnerable people first. We want to get this vaccine out rapidly. So our planning has always been, firstly, vaccinate the vaccinators, which has happened with GPs and shortly with pharmacies now and our own healthcare workers. That's part of our mobilisation plan to scale up. So our mobilisation plan is a combination of what's happening at the moment with GPs and their practices. Secondly, some of the vaccination centres which we're using for GPs to vaccinate, administer vaccinations to their patients. And thirdly now, up to about 40 vaccination centres all across the country. And if I just give you the example of the Helix that we were in DCU on Saturday, we administered approximately about 1,000, probably more than 1,000 vaccines to the age 85 years plus. That centre will be facilitated to do 5,000 per day. It's 35,000 per week in that single centre. And we learned a lot on Saturday just about the whole administration process to help us strengthen that further. But ultimately, it worked quite well.
What kind of problems did you run into?
Well, it wasn't so much problems, but you're always a function of where the choke point is in the whole process. So how you get people through registered at the start of the process. Certainly it moves through really quickly then into the vaccination process itself. There were 48 booths there, all working really effectively. And then you have to make sure you have sufficient space and time for big numbers as we move into it, for the observation area afterwards. So it wasn't so much problems, but we were able to see the process working and also our system deployment to work for it as well.
And to get to 5,000 a day in a centre like that, will you need to increase the opening hours or can you do it in the time you have allotted at the moment?
Well, we have it based on a 7-day basis and we have it based on a 12-hour shift basis, which we believe is the most effective and efficient way of administering this to the population. Ultimately, if supply even increases further, you know, we'll look at that as well. But we do believe that that 7-day basis, 12-hour shift basis is the best effective utilisation.
So you might move beyond 12 hours a day?
We're not planning to because all our modelling at the minute demonstrates we will be able to do it at that stage. But look, everything about our plan so far, I'm looking at a plan that we've started at the literally since the 29th of December. And there's been probably about 9 changes to it already based on supply, based on vaccine types for different aged populations, based on prioritisation. But we've adapted, we've adjusted every single time. And we continue to meet the supply. So that's what we will have to do. That's what we're planning to do.
I was really interested to hear you say to my colleague Sharon Tobin that GPs should have discretion on who should get the vaccine within reason. Now, we had Dr. Mary Favier on the programme and she said that there shouldn't be discretion, that there's a very fixed plan in place. So which is it? Because we get contact from people all the time who say, oh, I heard such and such a person got the vaccine out of sequence. What are the rights and wrongs of sticking to the plan?
Yeah, you are right. And I did hear Mary, and she was right. First of all, there is a prioritisation, there is a sequencing, and that's the way we're rolling it through. And you are right, there has been some exceptions where that caused a lot of frustration for myself as well and others. So there is a sequencing plan. Specifically, if you take the 85-year age plus, or the 70-year age plus, my point was, and is the fact, we have to have level of pragmatism to support the GPs in this process. So we've issued a letter just last week, our Chief Clinical Officer, to Colm Henry, issued a letter to all GPs, which sets out the process for them for vaccinating this age group, 70 years. And what it is, in essence, it is, first of all, they plan their list for the 85-year age, and they have that list ready. But as we know, we don't want any vaccines wasted or vials wasted. So they have a level of pragmatic solutions there. For example, if they have some vials left, they should have a standby waiting list ready and start to call them during the day. If they have gone through that and they have somebody, a member of staff, who is in their practice team is over 70 years of age, they can vaccinate those. Or thirdly, if there is a partner, a husband, wife, spouse of a person who has come in, they're age 85, they're getting their administered vaccine, but they're, let's say, 78, there is a process in place where there's vials left that they can vaccinate that partner
so
as well.
Only if there are leftover vials?
Well, I think it's a planning process, Claire, that we have to plan, because otherwise there is no sequencing, otherwise there is no prioritisation. So it is, you know, it is a pragmatic solution that they can work through. And I think what I've heard back from GPs, and we're almost over 100 of them in the DCU on Saturday, they believe the plan overall is very strong, believe it's very pragmatic, and believe it's a reasonable approach about how we're vaccinating people overall. Because just I know I spoke about the Helix, but the vast majority of the vaccinations of this age group are taking place in the GP practice themselves, over 900 GP practices. Then a smaller number, three centres, actually, I should have mentioned this weekend coming, both in Munster Technical University in Cork and also in Galway, Maryland Park, to be vaccine centres for the age groups as well.
You'll know that there are plenty of GPs who say, look, we could fly through this if we were allowed to administer the vaccine in the local community hall or the parish centre, and you've decided not to allow them do that.
No, and just to, I can make a comment on that, just so we're clear from the HSE perspective. We've worked this through with the representative body of GPs, the IMO, and the preference from all of us, up to including calls late last night with our own teams and GPs, is to do those three types of approaches. Vast majority in GP practices, a smaller number in three centres, or a reasonable number of people vaccinated in three centres across the country, and thirdly, a buddying up system. Now, the reason for that is we have to put in place processes that are safe and secure for the logistics, the transportation, and indeed the security of the vaccine in all places. So we believe the approach that we've taken meets that need.
Okay, so you don't think that a parish hall could be used? Because Dr. Stephen Murphy was one of the people we were talking to here on the programme. He said that he could vaccinate about six times faster if he had access to the local hall.
No, I'm not saying they could never be used. What I'm saying is the approach that we've taken gives the best level of security and protection and clinical focus in the centres that we're using. And, you know, the vast majority of the 2,500 GPs all across the country in 1,400 practices are working through this process with us. And it is working.
We're all hearing about the plan for reopening in the UK, where they have 17.5 million people vaccinated, and it feels as though they're returning back to some sort of normal much quicker than we will be. And we all feel vaccine envy here. Do you understand that? Do you feel that as well when it comes to our supply, when you see what's going on even north of the border?
Every day, Claire. Every day. I would love that we had the supply element that the UK has. We have worked through a process which has served the country well in the past through EU for medicines, for supplies of drugs, for pricing, and it served us well. And that's the process we're working through right now. But certainly, yeah, it is challenging when you're compared, particularly just north of the island and in the north of Ireland, where there's certain levels of supply. But, you know, like I said at the start of this, I think as we head through this quarter, and particularly as we head into next quarter, we will see the EU supplies to us ramping up, the public will begin to see the light emerging, particularly what we saw on Saturday in the centres that we're seeing from the 85-year-olds.
The school reopening plan, which we're expecting to hear about tomorrow, I'm just wondering what the HSE role will be on monitoring outbreaks when there's more movement in the community. Have you had a conversation with government, with the Department of Health, about whether you'll have an increased track and trace or monitoring role in that?
Yeah, well, look, from the HSE's perspective, we have always been strongly advocating the return to schools is safe. The return to schools is important for us. You know, we did a report just after September last year for a School of Paediatrics and the RCSI assessing the impacts of young people not being in school, particularly vulnerable children, particularly people with special needs, and particularly people from lower social demographic or economic groupings. So we are good advocates of getting people back to school safely. Our role will be, continue to be, continuing with mass testing as we did in September, the last term, September onwards to Christmas. And if you look at the testing numbers that we did throughout that whole process, we had 35,000 tests completed, which was a positivity rate of about 2.7%. So our role will be twofold. Firstly, continuing mass testing wherever positive cases identified in the school, testing all the appropriate people by the public health, teachers and pupils. And secondly, in terms of the community transmission, yes, we will be. And our strong public message...
Will there be a change, though, once the schools go back? Because as we understand it, there'll be a two-week period where we watch and wait and see whether the other classes can come back.
Yeah, I mean, that is currently government's approach to that. And from HSE perspective, we will work towards all of that. Obviously, that's policy decisions for the Department of Education and government. From our perspective, we will monitor that closely. If the transmission levels in the community, and it is important, if I can say the message to people, as schools do reopen, it's great to get schools open. That's good for everybody. The transmission levels are still strong in the community. We're still at with great progress made. We're still at high positivity rates in the community. So the mixing and gathering, leaving to school and after school is really important that we keep that to the minimum. In fact, you know, avoid mixing and gathering when leaving kids to school, because, you know, let's keep the school safe and let's keep the transmission levels in the community safe.
So it's likely that there will be stricter guidance around that, would you expect?
Well, I think the guidance is always and will always be, and certainly our public health guidance will be for parents, guardians of people bringing young people to school, to, you know, avoid mingling, avoid going for coffees, avoid sharing cars, avoid shared transport, and keep the good public health measures, because schools have proven to be safe. I mean, if you look at the positivity levels in primary schools, it was about 3%.
But it was the movement around that that was a concern.
Yeah.
Just on children, I see the Health Protection Surveillance Centre this morning reporting that 56 children were hospitalised with COVID in the last 2 weeks.
Yeah, and thankfully, and we, you know, it's thankfully so far nobody has moved into ICU or serious illness. But we have seen throughout this, you know, there's probably more data being published, but we have seen younger people being treated in hospital cases. And certainly with this variant, we've seen it a bit more prominent. But thankfully, we haven't seen the high levels of sickness, or we haven't seen the high levels of ICU admission. There has been some. In very young age children, but
has that changed though? Those figures that we see this morning, does that represent a shift?
I don't think so, Claire. I think we've always had younger people admitted to hospital. I would have a concern just around the current variant, as you know, in the community, again, for people keeping their guard. But we haven't seen anything hugely significant over the trends. There has always been some young people admitted to hospital. But again, thankfully, we haven't seen them emerge as really bad sick in some very minor cases.
You mentioned the variant, and you mentioned community mobilisation around schools reopening. Reports over the weekend, look at, I think many of us saw it with our own eyes. So many people came out. People were like cattle being let out of sheds after a long winter. I don't know if you saw that yourself around the place, that people seem to be descending on beauty spots in particular.
Yeah, it's a natural tendency of us all, isn't it? Spring is in the air. It was a little bit warmer yesterday and everybody wants to get out. This has been a tough few weeks since Christmas for everybody. Now, firstly, to reassure people, what everybody has done is working. All of the measures, whether it's incidence rates, hospitalizations, ICU, mortality rates improving, GP referrals improving. But we are still at a very high base and this can trigger the wrong way very quickly. So I would be saying to people, I totally understand everybody's need to get out, but we need to do it in a very safe manner. We need to do it, and you know, certain people's attraction to certain spots all of the time can be a big risk factor for us. So, you know, I understand it, but we're on a very high base still at the moment, and this can trigger the wrong way. So again, for everybody to really hold your guard, I know it's tough.
The other news over the weekend, of course, was this variant, which first was discovered in Brazil. Three cases here in Ireland now. There were two conflicting reports as to how the variants were discovered. I know Colm Henry said that they were detected at the airport, and then Cillian de Gascoigne said that the three people presented themselves for testing. How exactly did the HSE find those three cases?
Yeah, well, obviously, you'll notice, Claire, we try to avoid going into each specific case, but I have to say, what did work this time is some of the process changes that we've put in place for monitoring and following up any of the variants that arrive or have been detected. So, for example, we've put a whole new process in place which worked in these cases where people, if they go to GPs, there's a GP referral category for the GP to identify it, for our contact tracing teams, for our public health teams to immediately get alert on that and to advise a person around self-isolating, to arrange the day 5 test. And then we treat very differently their close contacts. So we might have a more stringent approach to their close contacts and test more of them than we might in another scenario. And then following through if it's a positive case for the genome sequencing through the NVRL to happen. So those process steps were designed and put in place and did work on this occasion.
Mm-hmm. But there may have been cases that you might have missed. And we know there are concerns that, you know, the Brazilian variant in particular might be circulating, particularly when we see those figures from the Sunday Independent yesterday, 2,000 people from Brazil arriving in during a 28-day period this year, in the last few weeks.
And yes, from a HSE perspective, we are definitely concerned about variants and what variants may emerge. Not just now, but in the future. You're right, we have the P1 version that's called right now and the B117, which is the UK variant and the South African variant. So we're always concerned about that and how they may get into the country. And obviously, government are looking at finalising the policy around quarantining.
But like texting those people, that's not going to catch every case in that instance, is it?
No, and I think the revised measures that government are finalising around quarantining is going to benefit us significantly, I believe. I do always feel the need to kind of qualify the travel. It is a big issue, particularly as we're talking about variants. But it is, and quarantine will be another tool in our toolbox. But it is, if we look at the 80-20 factor, it's particularly around community transmission that we can't lose sight of. And, you know, I'm always concerned, particularly concerned about some of the naming of some of the virus.
So let's say, what's the UK variant called? The B117, right? Mm. That accounts for 90% of cases here now. So we say travel's not an issue. It is.
Oh, yeah. Travel is an issue, has been an issue in terms of transmission of virus. So certain processes are put in place by the Department of Health, Department of Transport, around people coming in, filling in identifications and follow-up processes that are not run by the HSE, but are important parts of our toolbox for people who've followed up and contacted. From a HSE perspective, we are very clear. We'll put in all the practices and places from our testing, tracing, isolation measures that we have. We've strengthened them based on the new variants that are emerging. I think government policy is changing in relation to quarantine, and that will help too as well. So, you know, it's a suite of measures, and unfortunately it's never one single solution.
Okay, just before I let you go, are there any plans to put meat plant workers higher up the priority list when it comes to vaccines?
Well, there's a category, as you know, which are key workers. That is a process that National Immunisation Advisory Committee will look at overall. I'd just say a couple of things on meat plants. I mean, overall, the meat industry has made great strides about improving infection prevention control, how the plant is set up, the spacing, you know, good controls in place on it. And as we know, it's not just about the plant itself. It's about transport to work. It's about co-living. So it's a whole range of measures put in place. But our serial testing is continuing in meat plants. And serial testing is about 2%. Positivity. So, you know, good measures have worked in those places.
So there is serial testing happening right now at meat plants?
Yeah, we've had some serial testing happening in meat plants, and the positivity rate is around just what I've said to you.
Okay. We'll leave it there, Paul Reid. Thank you very much for joining us on the programme. Paul Reid, the CEO of the HSE.
Text 51551 today with Clare Byrne on RTE Radio 1.